Lecture 11, Triumph of the Dutch Republic.
Our last lecture stopped in about the year 1577, and we saw how at that point in the Netherlands, the mounting frustrations of, interestingly enough, the Catholic aristocracy, especially over the mutinies and the outrages of the Spanish army, drove them to make common cause with the Orangist rebels against the crown of Spain. This unity was expressed in a document called the Pacification of Ghent, which was promulgated by the Netherlander States General in November of 1576, and was accepted, actually was dictated to, the Spanish governor, Don John of Austria, pursuant to a document called the Perpetual Edict in February of 1577. Now, to the modern mind, the Pacification of Ghent and the Perpetual Edict, which suspended the fighting, declared the end of all persecution, so on and so forth, may have seemed like a fairly reasonable basis for ending the fighting in the Netherlands. Unfortunately, however, that understanding did not last very long. The Prince of Orange and the rebel provinces did not trust the Spanish government, and it's hard really to blame them after the Council of Troubles, after secret arrests, so on and so forth. Indeed, after several attempts on Orange's life, sponsored by the Spanish government, it's hard to imagine how they could trust the Spanish government. More specifically, the Prince of Orange and his allies were convinced that Philip II was not going to allow the provinces of Holland and Zeeland to return to royal obedience without insisting upon Catholic uniformity. And by this point in the struggle, the rebels were really under no circumstances whatsoever willing to renounce their reform, that is to say, their Calvinist religion. And I think it's worth focusing on this point at least for a bit, because when discussing the wars of religion in Europe, one often encounters the charge, indeed it was often leveled during the 16th century itself, that these wars were really not about religion. They were about something else, about politics, about power, about material wealth, so on and so forth. But one of the most striking features of this revolt is, in a sense, Philip II's, at least from a realpolitik point of view, irrationality. He insists over and over and over again he will not be a king of heretics. He cannot allow them in his kingdom. And he invests enormous sums of money, enormous resources, enormous amounts of time of his empire into retaining these provinces and in an effort to extinguish all religious heterodoxy in them. If Philip had only been interested in the pure secular power of his empire, it's hard to imagine that he would have tried so long and so hard in what was ultimately a futile enterprise. And yet Philip seems to have believed, at least in his own mind fairly sincerely, that it was about his immortal soul, that he would endanger his immortal soul if he were to allow heretics in his kingdom. In fact, it's a kind of a striking comment about Philip II that when he was dying in his last moments, he had surrounded himself with religious relics and so on, and he was passing in and out of consciousness, and the people who were around him wanted him, because they were loyal to the king, to stay alive for as long as possible, that even when he didn't respond to the entreaties of his family or the presence of the people around him, if someone were to say, "Don't touch the king's relic," several times Philip was actually able to bring himself out of his unconsciousness to make sure that his religious relics had not been disturbed before lapsing back again into unconsciousness. But to go back to the Netherlands, like I said, the Prince of Orange and his allies were not willing to renounce their reform religion, and indeed, they openly declared that they would not even accept Don John as Governor General. The Prince of Orange declared also that he and his allies would not be bound by the States General's decisions on the religious settlement. That is to say, although the Catholics had hoped that they could reach some kind of collective decision on religious matters, Orange and his allies were not willing to allow the overarching body to decide the fate of their provinces. At the same time as Orange and his allies were justifiably, it seems to me, suspicious of trusting the Spanish crown, the Catholic leaders in the States General were themselves suspicious of the Orangists and didn't trust them either. They found the statements that Orange had made about refusing to accept Don John as Governor General, refusing to be bound by the States General's decisions on the religious settlement and so on and so forth, fairly alarming, to put it even mildly. But even more alarming to the Duke of Aerschot and the other Catholic leaders in the States General was the spread in the years 1577 and 1578 of what they came to call Calvinist outrages against Catholics. What had happened was that in October of 1577, two Calvinist ministers mounted a coup in the city of Ghent.